Moncrief on News Talk.
As you've been hearing, all weekend counts are still ongoing in the local and European elections, and they look set, some of them at least, to keep going until the end of this week. There is, though, a vast amount of people who make all that happen. They put in long hours and take the responsibility of executing democracy in this country very seriously. So to give a sense of how exactly all this works, we're joined by the former Fianna Fáil strategist and campaign manager, Derek Mooney. Afternoon, Derek.
Hello, Sean. You well?
Now, when you go in to vote and there's people sitting at a desk and, you know, they cross off your name and make sure you get your ballot paper and all that stuff, those people, who is that a temporary position those people have, or who do they work for the rest of the time?
Well, it is a temporary position. So, and around the time, that once the election is called and the Department of Environment issues the writs, etc., but basically the administration of the election in each constituency falls to the local returning officer, who's a council official, city sheriff or whatever, and they would then put out a call to employ people. So if you go to the Dublin city sheriff or Dublin returning officer, there's various websites, or Mayo or Sligo or wherever, .ie, you'll actually see, and I think they're still up there at the moment, which is, you'll see that you can actually apply to be a polling clerk.
Oh.
So they're temporary positions. Now, they can be held by people who hold other public service positions or public roles, but or retired or whatever, or students, bits and pieces. You can apply to do those. Now, there's a lot of people do this on a rolling basis, and every time there's an election coming up, they can see, you know, a bit more pin money coming in. But these are paid officials sitting behind the tables. But it's a long day. So, like, they're going to be there from... The polling association's open from 7 o'clock till 10 o'clock. But they have to be in place beforehand to help set up, to get the ballot papers set out, to have the registers ready, because as you go in, obviously, you know, you hand over your polling card. One of the people behind that table will mark you off on the register to show that you've voted. The other person will then tear out the ballot paper, and we saw the size of the ballot papers in the European elections this time around. Even tearing out the ballot paper is not the easiest job. I saw some friends of mine had torn ballot papers, and then to have to stamp it, because the ballot paper isn't valid unless they use that punch to knock to put holes in it to show that it's a valid ballot paper. So it's a long day. So they've been there, say, an hour beforehand, then at least probably an hour and a half afterwards, as they tabulate and correlate, so that each of those ballot books, they have to show how many people showed up to vote, how many ballot papers were issued. That will be certified. It will go into an envelope. That will be attached to the ballot box. The ballot box will be sealed. It will be collected by another group of officials who will be brought to the counting centre and then monitored and kept safe overnight. But then the next day, all of that has to be cross-referenced. So it's a very methodical, slow, painful process, particularly when you're doing it manually by hand, as we are here.
Yeah, now that raises another couple of questions. If somebody did tear a ballot paper, could that count as a spoiled vote?
Well, what you can do is you can ask the person to give you an untorn one, and but they would then have to account for that torn ballot paper.
Yeah.
Usually there will be a person in charge of each polling station. So you go into your polling station, there's normally 3, 4, 5 tables. There's a ballot box in front of you over the table. There's every person then who'll be in charge of that, who will be familiar, and they will be in contact with the returning officer. So they would adjudicate, well, look, we think that ballot paper should be returned. That then there has to be then kind of basically certified that ballot paper was torn out, that it was marked, that it wasn't used, and would have to be returned the next day with the count. So everything must match up. So because if you look at the serial numbers on the ballot papers, so everything must tabulate, and that they, in fairness to returning officers and to their staff, they are meticulous in making sure that nothing goes astray. You can't have one ballot paper just, we'll fold it up, maybe put it back in.
Yeah.
It has to be all tabulated. It all has to be accounted for.
By the same token, Derek, can you, and this is not a facetious question because it struck me when I was voting, because the ballot, especially for the Europeans, that ballot paper, as you said, was so huge.
Yeah.
If you make a mistake, if there's, say, two people call Kelly and you vote for the wrong one, can you go back and say, I made a mistake, can I vote again?
Well, you can't vote again, you can only vote once.
Yeah.
So kind of, there'll be something done with the ballot paper to show that you had crossed out one and you moved it to the other. The ballot paper cannot be marked in a way that gives any extraneous writing that identifies you.
Mm.
But you can clearly show that you've rubbed out or marked out the first one and put in the second one. So it's a way of doing it that shows that this is clearly a mistake and that the number one. But the test in a ballot paper has to show a clear preference.
Yeah.
So if you have made a mistake, you can kind of like later, not, I don't mean rub it out in terms of an eraser, but in terms of put a mark through it and just kind of obliterate it and then put in the one. But if you didn't put any writing on that to say that, so in a situation like that, you would be better off going to the supervisor and basically say, listen, I've made a mistake, I messed up the ballot paper. Can I be reissued with a ballot paper? At which point you would give them back the ballot paper. But it's not clear, there are very, very clear rules in terms of how the staff do that. But they have to be able to add up for all the ballot papers.
Yeah. Now, and also, I assume there's a limit on how many ballot papers can go into each box. And is it somebody's job to keep an eye on that?
Well, not so much to go in the ballot box, but what they do is, so if you, it's not just random. So if you go in there, you'll actually see there'll be code numbers, etc. And so from XP1 to 800 is at this table, XP801 to whatever, 1200. So every person on the register has a number in each constituency. And normally up to about 800 people will be assigned to a ballot box. So that ballot box can hold up to 800 if there was 100% turnout. And again, bearing in mind that there's two ballot papers, I mean, there would be plenty of spare capacity. If 100% of people turned out, the ballot box would be able to hold it. But that's why the tables are broken up, and that's why you must go to that specific table to where you are on the register, because you must vote in that ballot box.
Ah, right. Okay. So when the ballot boxes then are moved to the count centre, the people who work in the count centre, are they the same in the sense that this is a temporary contract for them? Because I assume you want people who are...
A lot of them would be council officials. So as you go up the hierarchy in it, the people inside, if you look on television, if you watch the declarations over the next few days in the counts, you'll see there's kind of outer tables where you have people counting or sorting or straightening out ballot papers. And then there's an inner circle where the returning officer and their assistants are, and they will be full-time council officials. There would also be a couple of lawyers in there or a couple of legal agents, because there's a very, I mean, the electoral law is very, very strict, and it does set out the process for counting ballot papers and for how the process should be done, etc. So there would be somebody there vigilating or overseeing that process. So it would be a mixture of both, but the people making the decisions are all full-time council officials. They will be attached to the electors, because every council would have an area that's responsible for, or a department that's responsible for the maintenance of the register and running elections.
So the layout of a count centre, does it have to, because as you know, we all know, there are people there kind of organising the ballots, but there are also tally people there keeping an eye on that. So do they have to arrange it in such a way so that the tally people can have a clear view of the ballot papers?
And again, you'll see that, which is the way it's corralled and the way it's set up. So, for example, in the RDS, when they're doing the local elections, they would have had the various city wards or the local electoral areas, the LEAs, sometimes they call it a sector, but like the local election constituencies. So they would have had, obviously, what a Rathmines, Crumlin Kimmage, Southwest Inner City, whatever else around the place. So they would have had them broken up. So they would have been... You kind of see this thing that's like this, the barriers, like the aluminium barriers you see often in traffic. They would be set up in a square. There would be a line of tables inside of that. So the tally people are outside the barrier, looking over the barrier, and inside of that would be the counters. And the counters would be set up, so each ballot box will come over. There'll be two sets of counters. They would split the ballot papers up between them, and they'd start folding them out. They would normally kind of push them forward so the tally people can see them. So if you have four people working in a ballot box, invariably on the other side you'll have four party activists, volunteers, tallying, trying to look at the ballot papers and to see where the number ones go. Usually there's a cooperation so that the people counting this will move at a pace so that the people outside can actually do a tally. Because it's in everyone's interest for there to be a tally, because it can be a fail-safe mechanism, but it's not a formal part of the counting process.
Yeah,
tallying is an informal process.
When they're first, they're just taking out the ballot papers and they're kind of smoothing everything down. And it's kind of later on that they start putting it into in terms of first preferences.
There's about a two. I think like in the local elections, it's about two and a half hours. Process of just straightening out the ballot papers. In this case, because it's a European and a local election, separating them out, putting them into two different piles. So the European ballot papers together, the local election ballot papers together. In Limerick, that would have been three separate ballot papers. So it would, because they had the mayoral election as well. So that would have been a slow process. And then as they got all the European ballot papers out of one particular box, they would have bundled them first into bundles of 25 and then put four bundles of 25 together. So now they're bundled up into a box of 100. That's done up. Now they're turning off the now tabulates to make sure they have no ballot papers gone astray. So they'll total up what they got, make sure it tallies with the number of ballot papers that should be in that ballot box, tally that across the whole total. And only at that point do they start the sorting process where they go over to the pigeonholes and then starting allocating the ballot papers by where the number one is. And you'll see those big kind of boxes, like a massive IKEA shelf or one of those things or else. And I'm sure there's other brands as well that I should have mentioned, that they're there and they're putting the ballot papers into those according to where the number one goes. And you actually see it in the European count because the ballot boxes are not, because the actual ballot papers are so long, they're actually now putting them onto tables that are kind of stacked up, or shelves are stacked up, and according to the candidate's first preference, and those ballot papers will be sorted at that point. And at that point, you should get a random element, because up to now, the ballot boxes and the ballot papers have been held together. At this point, because of the sorting, and this will be done over a couple of stations, so you'd actually have, you wouldn't have one set of pigeonholes, you'd have maybe six or eight, and you'd have groups of people around there running around with those hundreds of ballot papers, sorting them out one by one into where the number ones go.
Yeah.
It's a slow, laborious process.
But for tally people, all through that process, when they're doing their tallies, are they just looking at the number ones, or are they looking down, down the various numbers as well, to get a sense of who's transferring to who?
Well, this is the key point, which is what you're trying to do, a bit of both. And it depends how sophisticated and how many activists you have, etc. And I think at this election, we're starting to see that there aren't as many party activists as there used to be. Because at one point, you would have actually had people doing both. Or so, the experienced tally person, the way it would done is, you'd have somebody at the rail looking over the ballot paper and looking where the number one is going, and you're calling it out to the person behind them. They'd be marking it onto a sheet beside the candidates, and usually do it by a gate. So it's kind of, you know, like at 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down, and then a bar across it. Or you could do it a box, as you kind of put a bar across, so groups of five. So they'd be marking that off as you call it out. The experienced ballot paper battalion is able to do it by themselves, while the other person is now looking for the number twos. Mostly you'll be looking at where some other candidates number two, so it will be quite targeted. So you wouldn't be doing an absolute looking at just everyone's number twos. But the actual tracking of the second choice and the rest of that tends to happen maybe when you're now looking at the counting. Because once those ballot papers have been sorted and you now have them allocated according to the candidate's first preference, that'll start going down the table. Again, they'll start resorting them, straighten them out and putting them down in front to make sure that if there's a bundle of 100, that there's 100 in that bundle. And at that point, now you'll be looking at the candidate's number twos. Now you'll be looking to say, OK, well, there, you'll be double-checking from the tally's point of view, is there 100 papers in that box, is there in that bundle, or is there 101? If it's my candidate and it's 101, I'll be saying, sorry, you've actually miscounted there. There's actually 101, not on. If it was somebody, some other party's candidate, I mightn't be saying anything. If I thought there was 102 ballot papers, then there were two. So this is the point where the talliers are not, now become quite partisan. But then you would be looking at, well, where did those number two go? And you'd be looking for a sense then of what direction you're going.
Right, so tally people would never cooperate with each other, even in the early stages.
Well, they do now, because quite frankly, they're not going to make it work if they don't. But maybe I'm being a little bit prejudiced, which is I'm talking back to my days back in the 10, 15, 20 years ago, when we weren't really cooperating. So, but you would, in real terms now. Having said that, when you do come down to these hard decisions later, then you do, the tally people do become quite partisan, particularly when it comes to adjudicating on spoiled votes and adjudicating on you do turn into your party person.
Yeah, and so
the first phase of it, there is now a great deal of cooperation, in fairness.
Yeah, no, do tell us about what is the process about a spoiled vote. Who decides on that, and can you appeal that decision?
Well, basically what happens is that all the spoiled votes, as you're going through, and even if you're a tally person, you look across and you say, listen, I either think there isn't a perforation on that, it hasn't been stamped, so that makes a ballot spoiled, or there's three or four X's. Now, by the way, counters are quite good at doing this themselves. There'll only be a handful of these will actually stray into the bundles eventually. But what will happen is once the returning officer is ready to do her first count, they will actually pull all the spoiled, questionable papers together in a bundle. They will invite in the election agents or the candidates themselves, one representative from each candidate, and say, listen, I am now going to go through and going to adjudicate on the ballot papers. The returning officer makes these decisions. What they do is, but they have the various agents for the candidates there to say, well, listen, I have a problem with that. I don't think, but ultimately, the returning officer makes that decision. They just want to make it as transparent as possible and have as much buy-in as possible. Can you object to it? Yeah, but at the end of the day, you're objecting to the person who's going to make the decision. So you're appealing, it's like making an appeal from the court. You're just making an appeal to that court, and he's going to say, well, I made that decision, but I've made that decision. So it and that's gone. But returning officers are meticulous in being as fair as possible and being as transparent as possible. And so what spoils the ballot paper? Silly things like if the person at the counting at the polling station didn't perforate it, didn't put it through that punch and didn't perforate that, that's not a valid vote. If you have, and unfortunately there's a large number of them we still see around the place. Somebody said there was about 9,000 spoiled ballots in the, I don't know if it was a lot, I think it was across Dublin in the locals, where people still put XXX instead of 123.
Mm.
Or if you put 2 1s, it's not clearly a first preference, so you have to express a clear preference. Or if you do anything or write in the ballot paper in any way that may cause disidentification, and that's now taken to a very broad definition of if you write in any way on the ballot paper, you just mark 1, 2, 3. If you put an X and don't put any other markings in it, that will probably be accepted as a number 1, but that's it, then it's non-transferable thereafter. But they are the things, the criteria, and the returning officer will be there, the agents will be there, nobody can touch the ballot papers except the returning officer, nobody else, everyone's kind of back a little bit, they're up around the table. He will show the ballot paper, he will explain why he believes, in his view, it is invalid. But from my experience of returning officers over the years, they are doing everything possible to find a reason for a ballot to be clear or to be accepted. They're not looking just willy-nilly to invalidate ballot papers. They're looking as far as possible to prove why ballot papers are valid.
Yeah.
And it's a very transparent process. I mean, there are many flaws and failings in the way we're doing it, not least the fact that we voted last Friday. We're probably not going to know the full outcome till next Friday. But the other side of that is it is very transparent and it is very fair. And the test is to make sure as many people's vote count as possible.
Yeah, do ballot papers ever fall on the floor?
They do, and that's why they have this constant tallying. That's why everything, the numbers have to add up. Somebody behind that thing is just going there constantly. And this has been double-checked. The other thing to say, everything is cross-checked. So when we went back, we were talking earlier about been two sets of people looking at each ballot box in terms of the counters. Like, they'll put them into bundles of 100, and then they'll cross-check. You'll hand it over to the other pair, and they'll hand over theirs, and you'll now go track. So everything is cross-checked and double-checked. And at the end of the day, the numbers have to stack up. And I've seen people going round on their hands and knees looking for ballot papers, going back to boxes. Was there a ballot paper caught in the bottom of the box, etc.? That's what makes this process slow, because everything is meticulous.
Yeah.
The returning officers, the staff, and I don't know how to do it because these are very long days. Very, very long days.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. Now, a few people have texted in with this particular question, Derek. And we're not at that stage yet, but I suppose we will be getting to that stage probably today or tomorrow. For instance, Ed wants to know, how are the votes to be distributed from a surplus chosen? Then what happens in a... So is that a random selection? They say there's a surplus of 500. I'll just randomly choose 500 votes.
Basically, on the first count, if there's a surplus, they'll go back through all the number ones. But thereafter, it's the votes that generate the surplus that I then take. So they'll take those bundles off the top. And again, that's why it's very... If you look and you see that once votes are bundled, those bundles stay together. And the order in which they're put together is kept. So as the votes are transferred across, they will add the votes physically to somebody's top. So it isn't just done on a computer. The computer is the backup system. It is done physically. But those votes that generate the surplus, they're the ones that you would then go in and look at. They're number twos, number threes. And if you're down in account 7, 8, or 9, you're not looking at twos and threes anymore. You're looking at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Mm.
So, and this becomes a very laborious process because you now have to remember the order in which candidates went out, what candidates are gone. So you're looking, well, the number two, well, that person's already elected, so now look at number three. Well, that person's already been eliminated, now let's look at the four. So in these different bundles, you're actually looking at a different number on each separate ballot paper. And that's why sometimes you'll see then they will put kind of yellow tags or notes on the register so that to look at these going forward. It is the one slightly random element in our counting system. If you look at it, there's a thing what they call the Shannon system, which is now that's a much smaller electorate. So you're going to even take the 949 councillors who are elected now will vote in the next Shannon. In that system, every surplus is based on you go back through all that person's votes and now produce a proportion. So you can actually have fractions of votes in the systems you use because it's those top bundle. You can't have fractions. It will be actual ballot papers that are transferred. But in the pure system, it should actually be go back through everything. But can you imagine the complication Midlands Northwest with several hundred thousand ballot papers have to go back through that? So that's why it's the top ones. But it's a really good question because it's not as clear. Now, an elimination is straightforward. So if I'm the next candidate eliminated and I have 10,000 first preferences, well, then all my 10,000 first preferences, the number twos, threes or fours, whatever's relevant at that point, will be looked at. But if I gained another 500 votes at the last count and I only needed 100, those top 400, now you will look at those having generated the surplus.
Yeah, okay, yeah, and yeah, you're right, the practicalities there. Somebody wonders, says, I noticed no Garda presence at my polling station. I was under the impression it was a given. Is it? I don't
know. It is a given. Call in nature, God knows what the man was doing and the rest of it, or the woman was doing the rest of it. I'm sure, but there is, because it is the one thing that everyone takes seriously, and it is the maintenance of the thing. So you mightn't have seen them there. I would be shocked if they weren't there. I would be absolutely shocked.
Yeah, somebody else wants
and
to
know. And again, by the way, don't forget, it's a long day. You would have had people rotating around, etc., and people shift changes and the rest of it. You never know. Could have been just some fella went out to listen. I would be very, very surprised if there wasn't a guard there.
Yeah. And I assume the way we vote, are all MEPs voting the same way? Is it exactly the same electoral
system? No, that's the whole thing, which is, like, I mean, if you look last night, the ballot, like, people voted here last Friday. The results weren't declared. Well, obviously, there was only one count that was done last night in time. But across Europe, most people are voting electronically. And I'm not going to touch that topic here and the rest of it. And the difficulty is that because I was involved at the first time around. And I was a strong advocate of it, and I'm getting told off with a lot of our friends subsequently. But you actually see that there's actually a forecast that was already produced last night by 11:30 across Europe of what the likely outcome is going to be. Because in a lot of different places, for example, some places they actually count as they're going along. I've been an election observer, and you look across various systems where they don't transport them to count centres. The votes are actually counted in the polling station. And they're counted immediately after. So there are various ways of doing this. We have a very fair, methodical system. There's arguments about how you could maybe get ballot papers screened and read and still keep a paper backup, etc. Though if you had a challenge, then you'd probably still have to go back and do the straightforward ballot paper system. But across Europe, a lot of countries have a list system. So you go in, you're on the computer, you mark your party and you vote for the party. And then according to the percentage they get, they'll produce a list of candidates, and if they got 20%, well, then their top 6 or 7 or whatever number of our people are declared elected there and then. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to go through one by one by one. So there's a couple of systems. We probably have, I wouldn't say we've the slowest counting system, but I would still argue that we're one of the fairest voting systems.
Yeah, and somebody else wants to know, do they have a constant supply of plasters for the inevitable paper cuts?
absolutely, and I can't remember whether it's St. John that there was actually medics on site I've seen before in the RDS for everyone. The rest of it, I would stress the point. Okay, I might have mentioned earlier that I mean I was Ben Briscoe's director of elections as campaign manager during the famous 1997 long count, the 10-day long count, which Ben famously referred to at the time as the agony and the XTD. But we were there for 10 days. I was nearly collapsed of exhaustion, and I was a young man then. It's a long days, and a long day standing around in a big hall I'm sure the catering is better now, and I'm not having to go with the caterers then. But it looked like you were eating a sandwich left over from somebody's 21st 2 years earlier. It was... You would leave there a week, And then, of course, the temptation was, as soon as you got out of there, to close the pub for the night, you went down and had 2 or 3 pints and then had to find his way to get back to the pub, back to the scan centre the next morning. So it's heavy going and it is exhausting. So, yeah, they have, it's more from paper, it's more than paper cuts they'd be worrying about. Yeah.
I would imagine so. Derek, thanks a million. As ever, that was Fianna Fáil strategist and campaign manager Derek Mooney there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.